Joined by TSN hockey analyst Mike Johnson. As always, a presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. How are you doing this morning slash afternoon, Mike?
Good afternoon. Good morning. Yes, you're right. It's like they took the Battle of Alberta literally and said, well, last time it happened was 30 years ago, so let's play like it was 30 years ago. That was strange. Oh, the only thing I want to know, though, game in Calgary, I'm sure Brady was one of the stars, or Matthew was one of the stars, but feels like Brady might be getting the second or third star for his unwavering brotherly support of Matthew, which I think is beautiful. Now, I'm sure everyone else does as well, but I've heard a couple of people say, would anyone have a problem with Brady out there wearing a Flame t-shirt or high-fiving or, you know, celebrating with Flame plans? Are we kidding me with this? I hope this is not a conversation at all. It's awesome. It's awesome to see a guy go support his brother, be around that atmosphere. It's not like he plays the same conference. It's not like he's not signed long-term. It's so ridiculous if anyone has a problem with Brady out there having some fun supporting his brother.
I think there's a few people, Mike, that kind of tiptoed up to that and sort of suggested it and were kind of testing the waters as to whether they'd get some support.
Yeah.
And then rapidly retreating when they realized that there's really not a story here at all.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. As
yeah.
they should.
Yeah.
As they should. I think it's great.
Now I got to ask you. It's 3:14 in the afternoon where you are in Helsinki, and so as we know, the games here Eastern time are starting at 7 o'clock at night, which would be, by my very quick math, 2 o'clock in the morning where you are, and then the late game is starting at 5 o'clock in the morning. So how is Mike Johnson watching and or keeping up with NHL playoff hockey in Helsinki?
So occasionally I catch the beginning of the early game live if I've been up late or if I'm working or whatever. But for the most part, I don't watch the early game live. The late game, though, as you mentioned, it starts at 10, which is 5. I often kind of roll over 6:30, 6:45 in the morning. I look at the score, and if it interests me, then I watch. Like last night, I rolled over. I saw it was 6-2. I'm like, oh, wow, Calgary's putting it on them. I'll check the highlights in the morning. And I rolled over 30 minutes later, checked my phone again. I'm like, oh, my God, it's 6-6. I better watch this. So I flipped it on and watched the last, you know, period of it live. Watching the updates of it, you just kind of scratch your head thinking, how is this even possible? Like, a team could play so loose. I know Mike Smith wasn't very good, and neither was Markstrom, and neither was Koskinen for that matter either. It's just so strange that first game, second round, where you think they'd be dialed into details and checking and all those things that make low-scoring games, they weren't. It's a tough one to explain.
Is it also cool, MJ, to be in my estimation, the second or country where hockey is popular as it is in Canada, and especially when it comes to Finnish players? I mean, they are so passionate and proud of their Finnish NHL stars.
Simmer, you are so right. Last night, Finland played Sweden here in Tampere, and can you imagine what that would be like? It went to a shootout. Sweden won. It was like a major, major deal in the country. And, you know, driving around, the drivers ask, you know, what are you doing here? You tell them they're totally interested, and you tell them that I play with Saku Koivu, and they immediately just start fawning all over Saku for the entirety of the ride. Like, hockey is as big as any sport in this country, which is not always the case in European countries. Usually it's football and then something else. But for Finland, there's a reason why they're so great at it, why they'd have lots of pride of it. So, Simmer, you're right, that everybody kind of gets behind this tournament, their national team, and their NHL players that are doing well.
All right, so let's get your take on what happened last night in Calgary. As we said, it was the highest scoring game in 29 years. There were 15 goals. And Calgary pretty much owned the game territorially, but the goaltending by all three goalies in the game was terrible. I think most people think Markstrom, obviously there was something up with his glove. Technically, he's probably going to be able to fix that fairly quickly. But for Edmonton, what do you do if you're Jay Woodcroft? I guess you roll back with Mike Smith. Do you really have a choice?
Well, given that Koskinen didn't come in and stand on his head, I mean, I think you probably do. This was always the fear, though, right? Like, give Mike Smith credit. He played incredible down the stretch. He played incredible in the first round, other than that kind of bad gap in game one. So he deserves the net, and he's played really well in it. But when you're comparing these two teams heading in, who would you have more faith that would play at a very high level, Markstrom or Mike Smith? And I think just the track record the last few years is that Markstrom would be the better of the two goaltenders. Last night they were both off by a considerable margin. But, I think Jay Woodcroft goes back to Mike Smith, hopes that he is better. And I imagine he will be. Like, no one could be that bad again. But I also think the checking in front of both boys will be better. I think Marcher will be sharper, and we'll settle into kind of 4-3 games and not 9-6 games. Sometimes the exuberance of the moment almost makes you lose your focus. because you're so caught up in the energy and the emotion and the physicality and how into it you are. You let some of the details slip, and then you put that in with some not great goaltending, and you get goals aplenty. So I think game two will look nothing like game one. I'm not going on a limb and saying that. I think it'll be much more what we'd expect to see in a second-round series.
So my thought on how it played out, particularly from Calgary's point of view, when they got up 5-1 and then 6-2, and it's halfway through the second period, and at that point, I mean, they were one of the best defensive teams in hockey this past year. You're thinking, okay, they're gonna settle in, lock it down, this is game over. I wonder how much, Mike, would it have come into play, like against Dallas? There was no room. There was, you know, they couldn't score to save their lives. Ottinger was just playing out of his brain through the entire seven games. And all of a sudden, they're playing this game against Edmonton, and they're getting chances galore. They're scoring goals like crazy. And instead of kind of locking down the details, you're like, it's like you're the exuberant dog, and your owner is trying to pull you back, like Sutter's trying to pull them. But they're like, they're just go, 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 because it's like, I can't believe how much freedom I've got here. Would that possibly what happened for Calgary last night?
100%. Like, I went in on this party too, right? Like, it's been 2 weeks of suffocating, stress-inducing, grinding play, and all of a sudden, like, look at all this open ice, look at these chances, everyone's scoring, everyone's feeling good about themselves. And I imagine, like, and let's put it on them early. Like, let's put it on Edmonton. Let's demoralize them. Let's bury them. Let's embarrass them. All these kind of sentiments, which would go maybe counterintuitive to us locking it down and being satisfied with the four-goal lead and making sure that one stays at least four, if not more. I think that's all part of it. And what maybe the surprising part, though, is that Darryl, who seems to have a very good handle on his team, couldn't spot that and rein it in. You know, he would see what's happening there, how it's still staying loose, and then he would be trying to, you know, rein them in, dial it back, get it under control, turn the game into a nothing game for the last 25 minutes and have it end up 6-3. And he was not able to do that. But also, you figure Calgary's better no matter how these teams play. Calgary's just a better team. But if the game does get fast, loose, and crazy, Edmonton has the two best guys on the ice for that kind of game. Calgary might have the best team, but Edmonton has the best guys. And if you give Connor free turnovers and a little open ice and some soft checking, like, you're going to get a lot of offense. But he will get a lot of offense, and he's going to score a lot. So that opens the door for Edmonton to come back in a game like that.
Is it also the case of the intensity every single shift, that when you get up 6-2, it's only human nature, it's going to be human nature, sorry, that there is going to be a bit of a letdown because he's not used to having that happen?
Yeah, and the consequences of an off shift don't feel quite the same like they did against Dallas, right? Like, one missed assignment against Dallas, that could be it, because every game was so tight. One missed assignment because you took three extra steps to take a run at Evander Kane. Well, that's okay. You know what? They got a 3-on-2, but that's okay. We're up by 3 or 4. It's not as big of a deal. Yeah, for sure. For sure. It was just a strange game that played out. And kind of understandable once you got into it, but still tough to rationalize. And I imagine both coaches would have their work cut out for them today with the videotape and breaking down all the game film, because there was lots to work with.
Yeah. What can Edmonton do? What can Jay Woodcroft do?
Well, I mean, start with the goaltending making saves, right? So, like, that will happen. You know, you get a goaltender that makes saves. But I think when you watch how they play, it's so much of it is puck management, you know, where they make plays. I make sure they always have, like, kind of second levels of support. So if there is a breakdown, it's not a 3-on-1, it's a 4-on-3. And I think Edmonton, as they started chasing the game, they got, you know, successful in scoring, but also riskier and riskier because they were just chasing offense. So Jay Woodcroft has had that team playing quite well since he's actually taken over. At 5-on-5, they've been way more disciplined, give up fewer chances, protect their goalie, and they have to get back to that, like, be comfortable playing a kind of a tight defensive style like they did. But I really think it's just puck management, staying above the puck, because they had way too many odd man rushes, way too many broken coverages down around the front of the net. And don't put your defense in tough spots, because if you do, you're gonna get burned.
A little flat in the Carolina Ranger game, not what I expected, MJ. I guess you can call it a bit of a hangover. Is that one that got away from the Rangers, where you thought, hey, this is one chance where it felt like Carolina didn't play with the same intensity and you wanted to bring that one home?
Yep, that would be one you look back and say, if we have to steal one in Carolina, that would be one that was right there. And Carolina did not play well by their standards. You know, I think Carolina would have watched what Pittsburgh did and said, let's just do that. You know, pepper the Ranger with speed and forechecking, and they won't be able to handle it. But they didn't. New York was good in that game, but Carolina just didn't come in that same kind of pace that you would expect them to. And to give up one last minute on a bad change, right, that you played so well, whatever, 58 minutes, you're right there at the finish line to get a game on the road to open a series. And on a bad change, you leave Sebastian Aho, of all people, alone in front of the net for an attempt and a rebound. That will hurt. The result will hurt, but even how they did it, Simmer, like it was of their own making. The breakdown that gave up the tying goal and then to losing it in overtime, and Carolina will be ecstatic that they got the win they wanted and they didn't play well. Like, they know they have so much more, and I would expect them to be much better in game two.
Dave Poulin said, I don't know if it was Monday or yesterday, that often the early, especially the first game of round two, especially for all of the teams that went through six and in a lot of cases seven-game series, can often be weird. And it's a chance for a visiting team maybe to go on the road because you're used to the intensity of the opponent you were just playing, and now you got this entire new group of players that you have to learn to hate. From your history, do you believe that to be true, that the early part of any next series is often a little strange for the teams before they kind of settle in and learn to hate with a new opponent?
Yeah, for sure. They've been so focused for so long, especially series that go deep, right? Because they've been so dialed into one opponent, and it's gotten greater and greater and greater. And to the point, it's human nature that there would be some sort of letdown emotionally, some sort of cathartic, you know, letting go of all that emotional energy that you were building up through the previous series. Now you got to, two or three days later, ratchet it all back up and do it again. And whether it's dislike or whether it's just like physical and mental energy where they got to like dial back up, here we go again. That's part of the challenge and part of the grind of the playoffs. And it will happen and it'll build back up. But yeah, it's not surprising that the guys are human and might have a little trouble doing that in the first game. But I think now, like you look at Florida tonight, they might have had that in the first game. Well, they can't afford that tonight, go down 2-0 at home. So I would expect them to, you know, dial it back up to the appropriate level that everyone would expect.
And to that, we had you on Tuesday, and we expected kind of this street brawl and rivalry. From the Florida side, what's more important, to get in some physicality or, hey, just flat out tighten things up? Because I thought Bob actually looked pretty good on Tuesday.
Yeah, Bob's been pretty good in the playoffs. He's had some really good moments. You know what? I think the physicality feeds almost their system play, right? When they put the pucks in good spots, they're able to be physical. And so I think they might go hand in hand, Simmer, where you're not looking out there to chase hits or chase physical play or scrums or anything like that. But when Florida plays in straight lines, when Florida is responsible with the puck, the creativity is there off the rush. But if it's not, they can put the puck in spots where that physical game will be there. And I think at this point, Florida would be well served. As you know, Tampa's kind of banged around points out of the lineup. You know, I'm not sure. Chernak's kind of been a little bit nicked up. I think Kucherov's a little bit nicked up. Like, if you can make life hard and difficult for them while playing within your system, that's something you're going to want to do. But I was surprised as well. I thought that would have been way more like last year. And it wasn't. It was exactly how the road team would want it, right? Like, kind of cold, calculating, efficient, detached, and a victory. And that's exactly how Tampa would want to play again tonight.
Is it too early to say that the Lightning would be in Florida's head again after a Game 1 win?
No, I think it's too early for that. I almost wonder, though, the bigger concern I have for Florida is, do they just believe that they can come back for anything? Because they have all year, right? Whether it's a game or a series or whatever, they just think it doesn't matter if we trail. At some point, they're not going to be able to come back, and it will be this series. If they don't win tonight, they're not going to beat Tampa 4 to 5 games, and three of those games being in Tampa. But I just wonder if it's happened so often that they've come back that, you know, they almost don't feel that urgency until they're down, and then they're like, okay, well, I guess we better go now, and then they go and they've been great. So I don't think they're in their head, but I don't think Tampa's in Florida's head, but I almost wonder if Florida is just believe their own press clippings that they're the comeback cap, and they're waiting to go down so they can try to come back again.
I did not expect Ekblad to be Hedman, but when you watch him on the same ice, you're looking big guys, big contracts, big points. Does Ekblad have the ability to shut things down, or is he just suited to, hey, when you're going to play a wide-open style?
No, he doesn't skate as well as Hedman, right? And that's the underrated part of Victor Hedman's game, because he's so big. But he just covers so much ground with his skating, and that allows him to check very well. And Ekblad is brilliant with the puck, brilliant in the offensive zone, but you know, when it comes to defending, which requires the skating, plus he's coming off a pretty nasty injury. I don't know exactly how healthy he is. He's not Victor Hedman, but there's only, you know, I don't know who is Victor Hedman. Is it Cale Makar and that's it? Like, I don't know who can play quite like him at both ends of the ice. So I don't think that's unfair to say that about Ekblad, but no, he's not on Hedman's level without the puck at all.
All right, one off-ice question for you, and then I want to talk a little bit about the Worlds with you. Rob Blake has reportedly agreed to a three-year extension with the LA Kings to continue as a GM. Everybody loves their prospect-slash-young player list, and they had a really good year this past year. Do you expect him to kind of stay the course and allow this group to kind of mature together, or do you think potentially he could take some of these prospects and go big-game hunting and really try to fast-forward the rebuild in LA?
Well, I think he tried to do a little bit of that last year, right, with Victor Arvidsson and Philip Deneau and Alex Edler, and they worked. They turned out to be pretty astute signing. Why wouldn't they be? He went to Bowling Green, Harvard of the Midwest, so shout out PG always. But I don't know. I mean, Dustin Brown is leaving. I don't think they're going to be chasing super high-end guys again. I think they want these young guys to grow, right? You don't want to keep emptying the cupboards to get existing players. Unless there's a really attractive trade. I think you want to keep introducing these young guys and have them become good, control them for 8 years, control their salaries for the next three, and build your team that way. So maybe a little aggression, but I don't think they're going to be, you know, super aggressive going to get two or three big-name players just because they have the assets to acquire them.
Your colleague Gord Miller tweeted out yesterday that the news on Tim Stützle, I guess, is probably about as good as expected. It looks like a knee strain that he suffered in the Germany game, and he probably will not play again in the tournament, although you may have an update on that. But just in your conversations with Gord, just in your conversations with people around the tournament, what have you heard about Stützle specifically?
Yeah, very much that. He feels fine. Timmy does, which is a good sign. Like, he went through an off-ice workout, and he tested it, and you know, if this was the Stanley Cup playoffs, he would play. But I think Ottawa is going to kind of exercise their authority in this decision and say, you know what, we need you healthy. We don't want to limit your training. We don't want you playing with at all a compromised knee, if it's a little sore, a little achy, whatever, and get yourself in a tough spot. So while you think you could play, and you probably could, we're not going to take that risk. So, yeah, unless something's changed over the last 12 hours, it looks like despite Tim wanting to play and stay with his German teammates, I think Ottawa is going to kind of demand that he stop because he is injured, but he wants to fight through it. They just don't want to let him.
Not the deepest talent pool, MJ, but just thoughts on Thomas Chabot and how he's looked in the tournament.
He's been okay, Simmer. Like, I'm a big Chabot fan, but you know, Canada's played Germany, who's been good, and that's about it. So, like, you know, they haven't really been pushed, and so I think, you know, some of the habits, the puck management, the super attention to details, maybe not quite as tight as it needs to be. They have the puck all game, so it can get a little careless out there. He will matter a lot more next week than he matters this week.
Yeah.
He is unquestionably their number one defenseman, but he's been fine, but it's not been a dominant performance because it hasn't had to be.
All right, good stuff. Canada plays Kazakhstan this afternoon, 1:20 our time, 8:20 prime time. Where you are, you'll have the call with Gord Miller, and we'll simulcast it here on TSN 1200. Enjoy the game. Always appreciate the insights, and I'll look forward to chatting with you again next week.
Okay, guys, have a good day.